makes computers seem easy, but that pocket protector says otherwise. And now, with a quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have a bunch in store for you here on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Keith Hemsedor is going to talk about how iPhones are saving lives after Hurricane Helene. Marty's going to talk about Rockform, Z-Wave, Z-Station, Wago, well, we'll talk about the pronunciation of those connectors as well. We've got the scam series, Bitcoin ATMs for anything but your own personal gain are bad. And I would even say that's bad, too. But Steve is going to talk about a lander on Io. We've got a listener questions in regards to Tony. He's got smartphone drain. Matt, mesh network speed issues. Bryce, what parts should he save from his old computer? I also have the IT Pro series. I'm going to give my thoughts about LinkedIn's Open to Work. And we have a review of the B Drive from Synology. And they've got a coming sale, so I'll talk about that as well. And the impacts of Helene on tech, as well as watching out for scammers in regards to any of these kinds of major attention-grabbing incidents. All of that, of course, is on our show. If you miss any of those items, you want to listen to them online, check out the podcast at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com is also where you can reach out to us and ask us questions, or you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Now, there's a website out there. It's called the Babylon Bee. It is a conservative-leaning satirical website, and they threw a lawsuit at the state of California over three brand new laws that were just signed in recently by Governor Gavin Newsom. One was in regards to labeling all political deepfakes clearly, which might run counter to over-the-top sarcasm or parody. Another is in regards to requiring large online platforms like Facebook to strike down quote-unquote materially deceptive content, end quote, even if it's reasonably obvious that it's satire. The clear problem is that these laws amount to a potential for abuse with people who have political agendas, allowing some satire, but not others, allowing Saturday Night Live to pillory a candidate, but not a website. Of course, I'm completely in favor of censorship and have been for, oh wait, I should label this statement as satire. Google has a new product. It's called Notebook LM, and it's one of the various language models, aka artificial intelligence. It can generate a podcast out of the text that you give it, and I've tinkered with it. It's kind of interesting. Two people chatter back and forth about whatever you provide details on, and then you ask them to talk about it. Someone fed it information to read about the idea of this exact topic, and the resulting quote-unquote podcast was a jarring bit of audio, a self-realization by the AI host that they weren't real. It is, of course, a programmatic reaction, and we don't know what data was fed to them, so this isn't truly evidence of self-awareness, but something designed to appear as such. Over the long term, we may have true issues with AI where it struggles with its own existence or artificial nature, but for now, it's just a simulation. What's not a simulation, also leveraging AI, is that a couple of Harvard students worked up an idea using the hardware for the Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses and quickly raised alarms for privacy. This is something that we likely would know that it was going to come someday, but the code uses the glasses to take a picture of someone. It then scans the internet, locates the person, then provides a wealth of information to strike up a conversation. Okay, yes, it has to stream the live video to Instagram. A computer then will detect the face off of that Instagram feed, download a bunch of information, which takes a couple of minutes, and then it feeds it back to the wearer. The twist to the story, it actually already existed to some extent and doesn't rely upon Meta glasses. but simply used them as one option for the delivery forwards and backwards of the information. That's a little bit of creep to it, but it's not as bad as what it could be. Now, tinfoil hat time, 23andMe, the company known for DNA testing, is, well, they're running into financial troubles. The stock is in jeopardy of being removed from trading, and it recently closed its unit for developing drugs in-house based off of, yes, DNA information, and they laid off a number of employees in the process. The CEO is now considering selling the company, which could include selling all of the genetic data of its 15 million customers. This data, filled with genetic information, has been used to connect relatives and reveal family histories, but its future is uncertain amongst the company's struggles. This much DNA information attached to names and addresses and all of that could be used in ways that we never expected, nor can it be predicted now. Current agreements and promises say that your data will not be used without your permission. But end-user license agreements are frequently filled with all kinds of different wording that says, yeah, we can change that agreement at any point in time. Yes, and new owners could easily change the stance that 23andMe has had for a number of years, legally. What is your DNA nightmare? Now, speaking of all of these different issues of with end-user license agreements, weeks ago, we had an issue, and then there was news, and we talked about how Disney had a problem regarding an end-user license agreement, and somebody passed away from an allergic reaction. This week, a New Jersey couple was blocked from suing Uber after they had a severe car crash. Apparently, their daughter clicked agree to updated terms and conditions while ordering food via her mother's Uber Eats account. Now, major corporations are going to continue to evade the court systems through these agreements, which we must all sign to gain access to whatever services they're providing. Regrettably, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of these issues until the courts come to their senses and say, no, this is not quite what people are thinking about when they sign an end-user license agreement. And what, we're going to make everybody read all of these pages constantly? No. Windows 11, by the way, how old is it? How old do you think it is? I'll tell you. 3 years old. Yeah, the latest in stats are in regards to their install base are in. And during that span of time, Microsoft has managed not to surpass Windows 10, the previous version, but simply to come up to half of the install base of Windows 10. What do I mean by that? Yeah, the numbers are somewhere around 33% for Windows 11 and 67% for Windows 10. Windows 7 accomplished this entire goal in just over a year. Windows 10 did it in 10 months and in 2.5 years, completely passed Windows 7. So yes, Microsoft has had a number of different issues with very slow adoption rates, with a matter of getting hardware out there that is built for this. And they've, in the past, reacted nimbly with newer versions that excited the user base, unlike Windows 11, which is, well, it's still not on my primary system that sits right here in front of me when I'm talking to you. Windows 10 is now 9 years old, and it's just simply liked by more people than like Windows 11. With a year left until Windows 10 support ends, nobody's even spoken about a potential successor to Windows 11, apart from the rumors, the hopes, and dreams of something much better, which is also very concerning. The nearest we're estimating right now, it could be next fall before we even see Windows 12 or whatever they're going to call it. A 40-year-old Apple Macintosh prototype, it's model 0001, is up at auction. This is the first one of these since 2019, which that one sold for $150,000. Keith M. Cedar expects to be outbid on this particular one. If you haven't paid for ad-free Amazon Prime yet, yeah, you should be aware more ads are going to be coming to your Amazon stream because, well, because they can. And Tesla. Less than a year since the first Cybertruck was delivered, and yet another recall was issued. It's number 5, if you're counting. Coming up next, the impacts of Hurricane Helene on tech, here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it, meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The news of last weekend's Helene has been continuing on, and the full effect of that hurricane is going to be affecting us for, it's going to be impacting us for a very, very long time. And in ways that you may not have expected, sure, we can start talking about how it really did a number on Asheville. And we can talk about all of the other surrounding areas, the major cities. But I want to focus down for just a moment on a small little town, Spruce Pine. The population of Spruce Pine is just over 2,000 people, 2,200 almost. And it is, well, it's nestled in the Appalachian Mountains. It has been all but destroyed. And there's a little bit of a problem with that. That we still don't know the full ramifications of this, but it's going to impact us. It's going to impact all of us, not just the people in North Carolina, the people in that small little town, but the ripple effects of this one small little town are going to be felt around the world. And This is not by any means to diminish the loss of life, which as I'm recording it is already way over 200 people. This is not to diminish all of the other property loss that is throughout the entire Eastern Seaboard. This is all about the source of pure quartz. The little rocks. Those rocks have a particular usage in computers. You see, to make semiconductors, to make solar panels, we have to make crucibles. And these crucibles, they need to withstand extraordinarily high heat. And they have to be absolutely clean. And where does that quartz come from? Overwhelmingly, the ultra-high quality quartz, the highest quality available worldwide, and also the home to the largest deposits of this, is Spruce Pine. Yeah, that's right. We're talking about how important this small little town is on the entire computer industry. We're talking about a process. They create these small little silicon chips where just a little bit of imperfection in those can destroy one of these chips. So when we look around the world, Russia and Brazil, they've got some high quality quartz, but not as much as spruce pine. To the extent that spruce pine has been exporting the quartz that they dig out of the mine there all the way to China. Yeah, this is something that we could be looking at a very serious impact. But this is more than just the mine itself. This is more than the residents there, because the infrastructure, we're talking bridges are out, roads are out. Most of the roads and bridges that lead in there have some significant damage. The trains that go into the town on the main CSX, that's the local railroad, in and out of Spruce Pine, that main line has been heavily damaged. And that was the primary shipping point for the quartz from the mines. We're talking about all kinds of different ways that this entire industry that I'm in, that people are in, could be set back for a very long time. So when we start talking about rebuilding infrastructure, when we start talking about rebuilding these towns, when we start talking about allocation of funds, we need to be thinking about all of these different impacts back and forth. And yes, I imagine we are going to see a lot of shifting in regards to how we deal with computers and technology, how we deal with all of this, because this process is reliant on a couple of thousand people, that many of which are really, how much rain fell? I want you to think about this. 21 inches fell. They had flooding in the town. The downtown Spruce Pine had flooded all the way up to the awnings of the businesses down there. 10 feet of flooding. Their grocery store damaged heavily. Power, water, cellular service, all of those down. Everything is leaving that community isolated, and yet we rely on this. Look, I'm going to be following this. I'm going to be watching this, and this is going to be something where we are going to feel the effects of that for so very long. But I did want to also talk about the fact that we are seeing a lot of support rolling out. I saw a video of some folks that the rescue folks in Phoenix, Arizona, they were getting in, just like, remember 9/11, people were sending their trucks, their fire trucks and all of that across the country. This is the same kind of effort that is going into Helene. They rolled out of Phoenix some, I don't know, about a half dozen trucks, and they were all towing those big, huge Kodiak boats or something similar to that to help with the rescue efforts. But as we move along with any tragedy, we are seeing the impacts coming through the industry, the tech industry, of all kinds of different organizations that are popping up out of the middle of nowhere that are looking to scam us. Yep. It's no secret. Every time we get one of these, any time you hear of a tragedy, there are all kinds of websites that are going to pop up and say, oh, we're going to send this money to help out the people of Helene. And, you know, this is something you need to watch out for. You need to be very careful whenever you're donating any money to any kind of relief effort. Anything that can tug on your heartstrings can be manipulated by those scammers. Look, they're always looking for their own opportunities to dive in, to basically set up websites. And we've talked about this in the past. We've talked about how many different groups have already preset tragedy websites ready to go. I was surprised to find out that a legitimate website that was based off of Hurricane Helene had already been purchased, was already in place, ready to go to talk about it. I'm not going to give out the legit name. This isn't the place to do that. But they had already set that up in case a hurricane named Helene rolled through. Can you imagine how many different bad guys have also done the same? Look, this is all kinds of scary, and there's all kinds of different concerns we can raise in all kinds of different directions. Whether we're talking about, yes, the small little town of Spruce Pine, or we're talking about, yes, all of Asheville and the surrounding cities. And we probably all have somebody we know from that general area that was impacted at least a little. So, yeah, look, this is something you want to take pause. You want to think about this carefully. If you're going to donate something, look, the American Red Cross is my favorite charity. I know if I'm donating to them, yes, a lot of the money is going to be going towards relief efforts. A lot of the money is going to be going to making sure everybody is going to be helped as best as we can possibly do this. Look, try to find a site that is going to use your money in the proper way, the wisest way, the best way that matches what you expect. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. Keith Amsidor joins me now, and Keith, what do you have for us this week?
Well, once again, Apple comes to the rescue. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I traditionally am not a proponent of early adoption of new versions of an operating system, whether it's a mobile operating system, a Mac operating system, what have you. However, there is a feature in iOS 18 called Messages via Satellite that has proven to be an absolute godsend to victims of Hurricane Helene in North Carolina and other areas where cell phone infrastructure has completely been devastated. And the ability to send text messages mm-hmm. via this feature on an iPhone running iOS 18 has been nothing short of miraculous and, might I actually say, without any jest whatsoever, life-saving.
Okay. To what extent? I presume that people are reaching out. They don't have local cell towers. I know that, what was it? It was 170 cell towers were taken down, and no, 370 and 110 are on backup power or something like that. I forget the numbers.
I don't actually know the number. I know that I have seen a number of tweets this week. One of them said that due to the lack of cell service.
Are they still called tweets when they're on X?
Well, what do you call them?
Exes? I have no idea. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Anyways.
People used to date. So, but it said, due to the lack of cell service, everyone in Asheville, North Carolina, who is on iOS 18 has been able to get messages in and out with the satellite messaging feature, which is literally saving lives. And other people have had similar sentiments. And there's some really cool graphics for this feature where it shows where you are on a map and it shows where you need to be standing, where you need to be holding your iPhone towards a view of the sky. And it even tells you what direction to position your body and where, how to hold the phone to stay connected to the satellite that you're making a connection with.
Okay. So, I mean, so this is a new feature. This is something that's in iOS 18. And I get it. You're going to have to train people. We're so used to it just working. But we're talking about the low power of our phones. The output ability for our phones is quite limited when you consider, okay, normal range for reaching out to a cell tower. If for 4G, it's something like 3 miles, 4 miles.
Mm-hmm.
For 5G, it's like half a mile. But now we're talking you're going up 120, 30, 50 miles to satellites.
Correct. But
and they got to hear that signal.
Well, I think it's more that the satellite is putting out the stronger signal than the phone as receiver. Because, I mean, even thinking about satellite radio, like your Sirius and your XM now combined as Sirius XM.
Yeah.
I used to have a little pocket Sirius XM satellite receiver, which was not much bigger than a flip phone.
But
you could just have that running off of a battery in your hand with a pair of, you know, earbuds and listen to a satellite radio.
But that was one way direction. That was sending to your radio. In this case, with our phones, that's a two-way communication. It's sending the message from your phone up to the satellite, and then it confirming back. Yes, the satellite can kick out the power. It's the phone kicking out enough power, which amazes me.
Well, here's the thing. It's not like you're making a telephone call with it where you've got to have a sustained a sustained signal to maintain the ability to send and receive, you know, audio and or video. We're dealing with basically the satellite version of iMessage, which is significantly an improvement upon SMS messaging, but it's just got to have enough of a connection to get a text message out. And that has been more than enough to restore some of the connectivity that has been completely it's not even like there's a tower here or there out. And so there's a little bit of intermittent connectivity or some spotty connectivity.
Some serious outages.
And
Verizon had an outage too, a massive outage. What was that? Was that Monday or Tuesday this week? I forget. Monday, I think.
Yeah, that was Monday the 30th.
Yeah, yeah.
September, yeah. I saw another tweet where it said, with the Verizon service absolutely dead after the hurricane, the Apple satellite messaging service was extremely helpful to reach out and let family know that we're safe.
Yeah. So that's really good. That is, I would say, worth the price of admission for upgrading to iOS 18. What about the hardware? What versions of the hardware do you have to have? Was that somewhere? I'm pretty sure it's on my 14.
Yes. I mean, here is what's interesting is that Apple has shipped some of the new iPhones with iOS 18, and some of the earlier ones have shipped with iOS 17.7 at the same time.
Yeah.
So some are sticking with 17, but if you want to be using this feature, you should be on iOS 18. And like I said, normally I'm not a proponent of, you know, the newest, earliest version of an operating system, But apparently, this is a feature on iOS 18 that is not suffering from any bugs or, you know, needs of improvement immediately.
Yeah.
So, if that, you know, I always say, you know,
it's a little late to find that out. Oh, great. I can have it, but I've got to upgrade my.
I know. And I've always said, unless there's some new breakout feature, don't upgrade. Well, you know what? This is a breakout feature. And if you're in that area, this is a reason to be upgrading to iOS 18.
Yeah. If you have the bandwidth.
Well, that's true. But here's the thing.
You have to have the internet connection to download the 3 gigs or whatever it is for the update.
True, but here's the thing. A lot of times, the operating system will already be on your phone because it'll get downloaded in the background. So the installer is already there in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Very good, valid point there.
So,
all right.
Apple saving lives.
Yet again. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That is one of the ways to reach out to us. Of course, you can call me, but with the form in the email, that's a great way for you to spell out your computer problems, your technology concerns, and also free me up to get back to you when I have a moment, because sometimes life can get a little crazy.
And it's a radio show, but you can send them pictures and videos, too.
Speaking of crazy, that's the voice of Marty Winston. What do you? How are you this week? What do you have for us?
Well, animal magnetism, or maybe iPhone magnet. You're an iPhone guy. There are a lot of people who aren't. So let me talk to both camps. I know that iPhone people have only recently discovered fun with magnets.
You know, okay.
They got that Apple introduced the very sciencey sounding MagSafe brand for things that could magnetically stick to the back of their phones.
Yeah, right?
Like, I don't know, candy that you've left on the counter. And many of those things are chargers. And sometimes they can both stick to the back of the phone and charge it. Imagine. Wow. Either because they're plugged into something like a USB-C port, it's a hybrid, or because they're power banks with their own batteries inside. So, you of iPhonia, can your pal with an Android phone use your MagSafe charger? The answer is not necessarily.
Okay.
Now, Rockform, R-O-K-F-O-R-M, has a pretty good MagSafe power bank. Mm-hmm. It can store 5 amp hours delivered Q1, or rather, I should say, Qi2 charging,
okay,
which means, you know, that's up to 7.5 watts.
Yeah.
My new phone, a Google Pixel 9 Pro XL, and when it's in the Rockform protective case, well, the charger intermittently begins charging, but over time disappears.
Mm.
So I'll tell you this. No Android phone can say that it's MagSafe compatible, but because that's an Apple registered trademark.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will a MagSafe charger work with your Android phone? Maybe. Again, I should mention that my 2022 vintage Google Pixel charging stand can deliver a 15-watt wireless charge, But with that protective case on, my Pixel 9 loses charge.
Yeah.
Listen, if you're from iPhonia, no sweat. The Rockform cordless charger rocks.
Okay, I see what you did there.
For everybody else, the current generation Pixel phones can take charging levels beyond 7.5 watts, beyond 15 watts, mm-hmm. up to 45 watts with a direct USB-C plug-in.
Yeah.
You can bet that I'm not risking my career by not putting a case on my phone. So in short, pick what's important to you.
What else do you have for us this week?
Oh, well, let's choose something brilliant. The Z-Wave Z Station. Now, I don't care if it's a Raspberry Pi or your Monster gaming system. If it has a USB port, a gizmo I got in lets it talk to most of the home automation protocols. Z-Wave, Zigbee, Matter, Thread, BLE. This is called Z Station. It looks like a hockey puck with a pair of antennas sticking out about mm-hmm. 30 degrees
above
horizontal. One's for the Z-Wave radio, one's for the Zigbee, which they say help give it about triple the usual range of their low-power IoT signals. So mm-hmm. if your home automation, for example, uses projects like Home Assistant, Z-Wave JS, Zigbee 2, MQTT, OpenHAB, Domestics, FM, Node-RED, or any of several others, you may want to
port hundreds of others, but go on.
Yeah, more than a few. You may want to port your old Z-Wave network to a Z-Station. One note, those antennas are slightly under-engineered, and because of that, fragile at their hinge points.
Okay.
So treat them gently. The Z-Station is about $160 plus shipping.
So how much do you have around your house that is in the home automation space these days?
I think I left 6 things still installed.
Oh, okay. So
I got rid of most of it.
So more along the lines of most the average household across the United States. I know I've gone overkill.
I know you have.
I have some 50 light switches alone that are that are automated. And that's and I only shocked myself once during one of those replacements.
I did learn something important this week.
Yes.
Those connectors we like that we can use instead of wire nuts and are safer to use.
Wago. I don't know how to pronounce it.
That's exactly what I learned.
Yeah.
It's pronounced Wago.
Wago. Wago. Okay.
It's from Switzerland.
Okay.
I always called them Wago. I thought, Wago.
Sure. Yeah. Those are great little connectors. I love them. Every time I go into replacing one of the light switches these days, I'm outfitting the whole thing with those Wago connectors. Yeah,
wire nuts out and Wago in.
Yeah, saves space, and they are far more reliable than those wire nuts. Oh, far more.
You tug it once when you first use it. What you may not know, I think you know if the others don't, I've been designing a product for production.
Yeah.
And I'm using that connector and some like it in a wire-to-board version.
Okay.
And as a result, I don't have to crimp or stake cable ends on.
Nice,
Push it in and it clamps until I poke a little thing to release it.
Okay.
Now, not all of them are Wago. Some of them are Wago, some are from other makers. But they are so innovative. In places people will never see unless you void your warranty.
I got no problem with that. Magnus and Moss Warranty Act. We'll talk about that another time. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way.
The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can. And they will work all kinds of different scams. And they'll try to get you to do a number of different things. And along the way, a lot of it has to do with social engineering. A lot of it has to do with getting you to do a few different things, a few small things, and then get you to the point where you do the big, huge catch for them, where you provide them some kind of reward. And frequently that is in the form of cash. That's in the form of your identification, your information, whatever it may be. But one of the ways that they have been really starting to bilk people of their money is through ATMs. Not normal ATMs. You may look at it, you may think it's just like any other ATM, but we're talking about Bitcoin ATMs. And the amount of Bitcoin ATMs is on the rise. I looked up just before recording and found some 31,000 Bitcoin ATMs in the United States. At least that was the number on one of the websites that allows you to track where the nearest one is to you. I found that in my ex-urban area, basically ex-urban is not suburban and it's not rural, it's somewhere in between. I found in my city alone that there were some 20 of them. That's pretty good considering we're not really a big city. So that gives you kind of an idea. That gives you an idea of how many Bitcoin ATMs are out there. And a lot of the different scams that are involved with this are going to be telling you many of the different things I've talked about over the years. A matter of you've missed a jury duty. You've got a you've got some kind of a ticket that you have to pay. You have some relative who needs money. You've got something, whatever it is that they're driving you to use the Bitcoin ATM doesn't actually matter. The only people who should be at a Bitcoin ATM, the only people, are people who want to lose their money. I've said this for years, and it's been a little while since I've really gone down this road. Anybody who's dealing with Bitcoin is looking to lose money. Yeah, and this is in any of the different forms of Bitcoin is just one of them. Any kind of cryptocurrency is really, if you're going down that road, you should be doing this only for yourself, and still you should be prepared to lose money. So no matter what it is that they're trying to do, whatever it is that they're trying to entice you into doing, if they start talking about going to any kind of an ATM, specifically something that might sound like Bitcoin or cryptocurrency or anything like that, it is most likely a scam. I want you, if you encounter anything like this, to immediately check in with your local law enforcement, see if they've got any kind of knowledge as to what's going on, and share with them. Look, communicating with them is far safer than you trying to deal with whatever it is on your own. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
He doesn't sound like a nerd, but the computers are still scared of him. Helping you gain the upper hand with your computer, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
Of course, you may reach out to us at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. And then there's a phone number as well, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373. 888. We are halfway through this week's show, so if you've missed what's happened already, do check out the podcast at ComputerTalkRadio.com. Making good on our promise of radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of us, I have Steve Keske, who joins me now. And Steve, what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, there is a video I was watching.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the possibility of going up to Io. That's a moon of Jupiter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all ice.
Yeah. Not the state of Iowa or the state of Ohio.
No.
But a little bit further away.
Io.
Quite a ways away.
Yeah. Anyway, their whole concept here.
Yeah.
Right. And they're in the design phase, and they want to design a lander that will land on the ice sheet, then drill through the ice sheet, and then put a, like, submarine. Only in this case, it is, well, what basically AI.
Okay.
It's out there on its own. It's a drone.
Okay. So an AI drone, which is actually, you know, when I start thinking about that, that's a lot better than what we've done going off to Mars and so forth. So, you know, they give instructions to these, you know, the Mars rover and whatnot, and they have to, I mean, the Mars rover, what is its speed on it? It's like 2 miles an hour is the max speed if it's going all out. Maybe it's 3 miles an hour. It's nothing particularly fast.
No.
But that's what they do. And when they run into problems, they can easily stop it. It's but they plot it out, they plan it out, and then go forth. But that can take what is the best round trip time for communications with Mars.
I think it's something like 10 or 12 minutes, something like that.
I think on the far side, that's the worst. I think it's 3 minutes
or more
when it's on the close side. Whatever it is, it's still a long time when you're talking about trying to predict where the thing is going.
And what's it going to do? But in this case, their whole concept is they can't communicate with it because it's under the ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it has to be a drone.
Okay.
Now, its whole concept here is to find out if in that water underneath all that ice, if there are microbes or any other things swimming around in the water.
Yeah.
Because if there's life there under all that ice, and that's over 10 miles of ice, people. Ugh. So,
yeah.
And if there's life there, gee, where else could there be life?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, all these type of things. In our search for life, on other planets and other orbs. There's a lot of information and some misinformation out there.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I would like to be around when that drone finally surfaces and comes back and tells them, hey, yeah, we got stuff here.
So I looked up the time delay. So it's 4.3 minutes to 21 minutes for Mars.
Yeah.
And depending on, of course, the timing, I found for Jupiter, it takes 48 minutes, 21 seconds. That was at the moment on July 5th, 2016. So, I mean, you know, wherever it was in the orbit. But, you know, it has to do with where are we in our orbit and where is Jupiter in its own orbit.
Yeah.
So, you know, think of how far that has to go. It's quite a distance. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a distance. That's why they're really worried about communications and, you know, is the sun going to have a blast that's going to disrupt all of the communications?
Sure. We've been talking about that a lot because we are in the solar maximum. Yeah.
Yeah. And hey, guys, you know, what's going to happen? We don't know. That's really a problem. But again, that's a drone. So it could be working up there for, days, weeks, months, years, and then all of a sudden come back and say, hey, guys, this is what I found.
Could be quite wild. What would you like to see NASA start looking into? What are some of the things that pop into your mind when I say, you know, if you had a chance to plan a mission somewhere within our solar system, where would you plan that mission for, and what would be the goal?
The goal for me would to be able to build a colony on Mars.
Okay. So you're right there with Elon Musk. And I'm with you. I think that actually would be my I would look for actually two colonies, one on the moon and one on Mars.
Yeah.
And the reason for the colony on the moon is, in my mind, is to support a gravity environment with sufficient amount of resources and workers to prep for sending more people to Mars.
Oh, yeah. And to me, if Mars is rich in as minerals as it might be.
Yeah.
No. All right. If it is, then I could see more than one colony.
Sure.
But again, we have to rely on one treaty. And that is the treaty that says, hey, when it comes to space, there is no countries.
Yes. I believe wholeheartedly in that. I believe that at a certain point, the colony should be self-governing to some extent because they're going to act in their best interests.
Oh, yeah.
But otherwise, yes, full support of all of the countries.
Yeah.
Going there and that would allow for sort of a democratization of space, along with a capitalization of space, because we've got to make it worth the while for Earth to send those resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are certain things that make it worthwhile, just in the inherent nature of
getting there,
but also preserving our space in the universe.
Yeah. Well, you were talking earlier about the rovers.
Yeah.
One of the things they found on one of the last rovers that they sent up there.
Yeah.
One of the wheels weren't working.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get this rover with three wheels to basically go where they needed to go because of the sunlight. Because of the solar panels. And as they were getting to the spot where they were, somebody turned the camera onto this ditch that one wheel is digging in the ground as they're dragging it along.
Yeah.
And they found salt and silica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which means there has to be water.
Yeah.
At some time, there had to be water on Mars.
Yeah. That's some exciting stuff.
Yeah.
We haven't found the little green guy, though.
No. Not yet.
Yeah, that little Marvin guy.
No.
You know,
no.
With the white helmet and, yeah.
Yeah, or the antennae.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. We do invite you to stick around for far more Computer Talk Radio, which will be coming back here in just a moment.
Trying to figure out how to explain it to your local nerd? Benjamin is always ready to answer your questions. You may submit your questions online using the contact form at the Computer Talk Radio website, computertalkradio.com. Alternatively, you may call Benjamin at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888.
You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh, yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh, yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can ask questions. One of the questions that came in, Tony, he wanted to know, why does his smartphone battery drain so quickly even when he's not using the smartphone? And this is fraught with all kinds of different directions that we can go in. We can start talking about if you've got any apps running in the background. And if you do, you may want to go ahead and stop them or uninstall any apps that you're not using, especially if they are battery drainers. Screen brightness is a key concern for those who are actively using it. Also, the timeout settings. So when you leave your phone, you set your phone down. Even if you've got an OLED screen, they're supposed to be a lot lower, but they do say, look, if you set your screen to go black after a certain period of time, you are going to actually conserve some of that battery life. Usually when you're not using it, there are other features that may be going. Location services is a huge drain, especially when you know, we've got all of these apps that we load onto our smartphones. And for me, I'm mostly in the iPhone world. There are very similar things over on the Android side. But you can download an app and it asks to track where your location is. And many of these apps do not need to know this. A few of them might need to know your location when you're using it. But for the most part, the rest of the time, no, don't worry about it. There are different features that you may rely on a regular basis, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. And, you know, some people will say, yeah, go ahead and disable your Bluetooth, disable your Wi-Fi. I find that leaving those on is not a big, huge drain on the phone. It's something that it should be on because it's going to allow for that connectivity. The last item I'm going to hit on for this is the battery. And the battery itself has a series of charge cycles that are allowed to it. And let's define a charge cycle. A charge cycle, if you use your battery down to 50% each day and you charge it up each night to 100%, that is half of a battery cycle. So that 50% plus 50%, day one, day two, you've used up 100% of the battery in that 48-hour period. Even though it's half of a charge each time, we start accumulating those up. And we start looking at some of those older smartphones. We think about something like, I don't know, I'll name off the iPhone 12. I know that the iPhone 12 had 500 cycles available to it, basically, until it got down to 80% of its available life. As you slowly use your phone or over the years, it will slowly lose its capacity. Now, in the newer phones, the iPhone 15, for instance, it's got 1,000 cycles available to it. So it should last a lot longer. However, of course, we're now moving into the iPhone 16, and there's a lot of push for us to move to Apple Intelligence on that side. And I don't know what Samsung, what the Android, the Google folks, what they're dealing with as far as those features. I haven't been tracking that as much. But be aware of that. You may wish to go and replace the battery if you've got one of those older phones and you're just no longer getting the life out of it. The cost on that, however, may be more than what you want to spend on, let's say, an iPhone 12, just as an example there. Matt, he ran into some issues with his bandwidth on his mesh network, and he asked me, okay, what do I do here? So let's talk about a mesh network. Ideally, a mesh network works like this. You have one router that you connect to your demarcation point. That's where your signal comes into the house. And then you've got two more routers, generally one or two, maybe three, maybe four, if you've got like a big, huge house, and they echo the signal through the house. However, what happens here is that they're not truly echoing. Most of these mesh networks operate ideally with a star arrangement. So it's reaching out to, in my case, I have a total of three Wi-Fi units, one on the demarcation point, and then two more scattered out in the house. Now, the connection goes to from that demarcation point, that inbound point, out to both of the routers simultaneously. It doesn't work in the fashion of it echoes it along, sending it first from one to two, then to three, and then back to two and back to one. Now, it will do that in many of the different mesh networks, but it wants to do it on the backbone. It wants to do it based on the origination point, the demarcation point. Now, what do we do with something like this? Well, you want to move your devices around. You want to figure out the ideal arrangement for your home. And what that means is, yes, try a different spot. Try a different place where you can plug in that router. Turn the router. I will tell you that one of the things that I found that was very interesting for me was simply flipping the router upside down. It's, you know, plugs in the wall and it's a two-prong plug. I flipped it over. Hey, boom, it got better signal just by turning it over. You may wind up in a similar arrangement like that. You also want to check around for interference. Some of the different things that might be in the house that can throw this off are the building itself. You may have metal in your house. You may have a matter of brick walls, maybe interior windows. And each of these has its own little interplay with the signal. It's going to all impact it to some extent. We can also get into some situations where the signal will be bouncing around the house and you may get some reflections that battle each other. Next up, you do want to check out and see if you've got a large amount of traffic that's going across your network. For instance, let's say you've got three different televisions that are all streaming Netflix and Amazon Prime and all of that. That's going to take up a lot of your bandwidth. That is going to be a distinct impact on your bandwidth in-house as well as throughout to the internet. Of course, you do need to check your speed to the internet. One of the things that I do, I utilize this website. I've used it for years, and it's a free website. It's called speedtest.net. And yes, they're sponsored by a number of different folks, and you'll have to deal with seeing a few ads. But it is a valuable website in that you can utilize it to see how fast you're headed out to the internet. For the most part, for most people, I'm going to tell you if you've got any of the recent mesh networks, whether we're talking 6, 6E, or even 5, you should have an internal speed of somewhere around 200 or better megabits per second. Going out to the internet, that's going to be a little bit different, and that is also going to be based on whatever it is that you have for a service provider. Fiber, for instance, is very famous for having synchronous speeds. What does that mean? Well, I get gig up and gig down from the internet. If I were on my local cable carrier, it would be gig down and 30 megabit up, which is quite a difference in speed. Most people don't really need that kind of speed going up, but it's still something to be aware of. Of course, if you own your own equipment, make sure that you've got the latest software packs on there. Make sure that it's patched and it's all up to date, and that may also help out. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. I just received a package from Synology just a couple of weeks ago. And in that package were some new items that I'm checking out. And this week, I want to talk about one of them. And that is the Synology B drive. And B, like B-E-E, the buzzing around. Yeah, you got it. The wonderful bee, the honeybee. But this is not something that's going to sting you. This is something that's going to help you. One of the things I talk about on a regular basis is you need to make sure that you have a backup. You need to be backing up your hard drive on a regular basis. And some people struggle a little bit with the various different software packages that are out there. I will tell you that to date, now mind you, I've been in the industry for well over 30 years, and to date, I have yet to see a software package that comes with one of these drives be ever so simple, ever so easy to use by grandma and grandpa. Yeah, we're talking, this is one of the best software packages that's out there for backing up your data. And look, we all have to back up our data. The different things that can happen to us. I'm hesitant to talk about Hurricane Helene again, but you've got the idea right there of why you need to be backing up your data. You have to have your data somewhere where you can just grab it and go. You don't worry about your computer. You don't worry about the monitors or anything like that. You can grab that small little item. And when we talk about small, this guy, this little B drive, is available in 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes, and 4 terabytes of size. And when we talk about the sizing of this, it is smaller than 2 Post-it note pads stacked on top of each other. And that is significant. For years, we've had these backup hard drives that are just, you know, they're extensive in size. And yeah, we get some of these that are about the size of an over-thick smartphone or something like that. But this thing just amazed me in the size of it and also how light it was. This was a pleasant surprise all the way along. But we go back to this software. So let's talk about the different things. So you load it up. You just plug it in. It pops up. And then you run the program that's right there. There's no confusion as to which of these different files you're going to run. It just says it right there in the directory. B drive online installer. And then you go through and you just run it. You just work the system. So what do we have here? We've got 3 different options when you load up the program. You've got your computer backup. That's a great option. Right off, it'll go through. You plug it into your USB-C port and it will go through and it will backup everything on your hard drive. Yeah, you can do some little deep dives and you can do some little tweaks. But all you have to do to re-backup your system again, plug the drive in. And yes, it'll just do it again. And then there's the file sync. The file sync allows you to operate much like any of the different systems out there, the cloud-based systems where you can store your files offline. You store them with whoever it is out there, any of the different services, but you can select its own folders or selection of folders. You don't have to be limited to just the one identified folder. You can sync up all of these different files and you can have a number of different directories, file folders that are always available with you. And it just does that on it just so very well. And then the other thing that I dove into was a backup of all of the photos on my smartphone. And it was easy to do this. It was so absolutely easy. The only thing I had as far as lack of ease, the time. It does have to move the files across. But look, this is something you're going to be dealing with anything. How much time? Not as much as you would think. This thing is blazing fast. I was still very surprised by how fast it was going. And look, this is one of the better products that I have had cross my desk in quite a while. As far as for general consumer use, yes, there are specialty items around, and yes, we go in different directions. This one absolutely amazed me. This was painless to deal with, and I've been poking and prodding, and it's really bulletproof. Again, I want to kind of suggest, if you've got somebody in your life that is technologically impaired, but they can handle taking it out of the box and plugging it into the system and following a few instructions, yeah, this is definitely worth it. Now, when I start talking about worth it, let's talk about... So, okay, before I dive into this, I can't mention the pricing and I can't mention the amount of discount. But I will note that I was given some notice in regards to the Prime Big Deal Days that are going to be going on next week, October 8th and 9th. And actually, Synology has done an amazing job at setting out a lot of different products at some very, very nice discounts. So Amazon does have a few of those, and you can watch for those. There is some specific timing, like if you're interested in the DriveStation 1522 Plus, that's the upgraded version of the 923 that I've got here. That is only going to be on October 9th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then 6:20 a.m. to 6:20 p.m., they're going to have one of their Wi-Fi routers on sale. But if you go to B&H Photo or Newegg, or if you go to Synology.com, Synology.com, Synology, you can go to their store, and they do have a number of different things that are going to be on sale. We're talking about, yes, the DS923 Plus that I have here, the B Station, which is kind of an in-between between the B Drive and the full-fledged NAS, and we'll be talking about that soon. We'll get back to that. But the B drives themselves, those are all on sale. Yes, the 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, and 4 terabyte, they're all going to be on a great sale. So again, this is, Helene was just a big reminder for us that we need to be doing backups, and there's a lot of different approaches that you can go at with this. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of how that all intertwines. An interesting thing happened just recently. A young lady by the name of Courtney Summer Myers was on LinkedIn. She had up the Open to Work banner, hashtag Open to Work. It's a little green banner that goes right along your photo, and it says that, hey, you're looking for a job. And she felt, okay, she had enough feedback from people that were making her feel ashamed for openly asking for help and getting a job on a platform, LinkedIn, that is designed to connect people with new jobs. So what did she do? She put up hashtag desperate in a very nice cute pink that matches up with her her top. So it's an amazing graphic that really highlights one of the biggest controversies, I think, that we've got going on right now with people who are looking for new jobs. And yes, that's getting her a lot of attention. And I thought I'd take a moment to talk about the idea of why Open to Work seems to be controversial. And yes, okay, yeah, in some regards, yeah, it could make you look, quote-unquote, desperate. There's a certain stigma that is attached to this, and people may consider this as some kind of a level of desperation, some kind of level of this person is going to be hard to employ or whatever. I don't think Courtney Summer Myers is going to think that. I mean, it was whimsical. She was just having fun with it while trying to find a job. And I think that shows promise for her. And there are people who say, okay, yeah, there's a potential for somebody on your LinkedIn that you work with seeing that. And that is going to draw negative attention to you at work. And it's going to have perhaps your manager say, hey, why are you looking for a new job? Or whatever else there is that goes along with that. And yeah, I get those kinds of negative connotations that may come with it. I've struggled with it. In the last time I was looking for a job, I was sitting there and I was going, okay, do I want to put myself as open to work or not? And I actually chose not to, because I was looking for a very specific realm of work that I do, and I was looking to be a little bit more selective, and I was already getting bombarded by all kinds of people looking for exactly what I have. But I will tell you, if you are looking for a job, if you've gotten to that point where you say, yeah, I'm ready to jump ship, or maybe you're already looking for a job because you don't have a current one, I'm going to tell you, there are very few downsides in my view to this. A, you've got the increased visibility. Yes, there are going to be people who are going to be going through all of these profiles, and it may be somebody that you used to work with. It may be somebody that maybe you used to work for, and they see, okay, hey, they're open to work. They're looking for something, and we'd really like to work with them. We'd like to have them back. That is something very good in itself. It's moving you towards that next job. It's showing that you're serious. It's showing that you're not just hopping out there and you're just looking for interviews to keep your skills fresh. It's not going to identify you as somebody who's going to be a time waster, but somebody who's ready to jump ship and move along. That also means it's speeding things up. It means you're ready to leave your current job. It means that you're ready to go through the hiring process as quickly as you can. It is a neon sign. And you know what? There's a reason why neon signs are so good for so many businesses. You might as well take advantage of that. Also, whenever you're doing something like that, when you're setting up yourself on LinkedIn or any of these other platforms and you're advertising, you're pushing the idea that, yes, I'm looking for a job, that means you're also going to be open to jobs that aren't going to be listed up on LinkedIn. They're not going to be advertised. It is setting you up as a potential person to look at. Hey, what are the skills and qualifications this person has? What do they look like? Maybe there's a way we can fit them in. We can put them in our company. Maybe not doing exactly what you've got a skill set for, but something adjacent. There's a lot of different things all the way along. And I'll tell you, last but not least, is the amount of support that you're going to get from people that you are working, that you are linked up with, that you've already had as friends throughout. I'll tell you, all of those different recruiters that you're linked in with, all of those different people that you've got throughout your entire contact list, that is going to be a highlight for them. They're going to see that. And maybe it'll be a week from now. Maybe it'll be 2 weeks from now. Look, I do not consider any kind of advertising, any kind of branding, any kind of pushing you forward towards your next job as being a negative. Yeah, there might be a couple of people who are naysayers out there, and I've heard touched on them, and I don't think listening to them, anybody who's holding you back, listening to them is going to still hold you back. So go for it. Post it up there. Hashtag open to work. Quick note, I'm not open to work right now. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Bryce had a question, and it's very similar to one that I had from someone else just recently. And but I've got a different twist on this. So he reached out to me. Bryce reached out at 888-NERD-888. So that's 888-637-3888. And the gist of it was Bryce had an old computer. He was going to throw it out, but he wanted to know what he could salvage from the old computer to use in the new computer. And this is where the industry has slowly changed over the years. It used to be, we're talking 20 years ago, when I was moving somebody to a brand new computer, we would look at a number of different things. We would look at, is the memory transferable from the old computer to the new computer? Frequently it wasn't, but if it was, hey, we could save on memory, or better yet, upgrade their memory in the new system. And then we would talk about the hard drives. In the hard drives, we could talk about moving the old hard drive into the new system, using that as a second hard drive or a backup hard drive within the system. But a lot of people, when they were buying new systems back 10, 15, 20 years ago, they already had plenty of hard drive space, so it was becoming less and less of an issue. As we moved along, more of a backup hard drive versus additional hard drive space. And then we talked about, yes, the video cards. Back in those days, you could move the video card over from the old system to the new system, especially if you had an upgraded video card. Now, when I get into conversations like I got into with Bryce, we start moving into this realm where most of the people who have older systems and they're upgrading them, they typically these days will know if they upgraded their video card, if they've got a lot of memory, if they've got a lot of hard drive space, and then they will move them over. Basically, if you're reaching out to me to ask us, no offense to Bryce, it's usually not going to be worth it. Most of the different things that we're talking about when we upgrade a system that is maybe 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, you might have one of the old-fashioned rotating memory hard drives versus the new solid-state drives. You might have a video card that is in the system, but it's a 3-year-old video card. The video cards have advanced over recent years, and the memory, it keeps changing, and it has changed ever since I started in the industry many, many years ago. Unfortunately, most of the time, salvaging anything from the old computer these days to put it into a new computer isn't going to be worth it. It's not going to have anywhere near the speed, the power, the whatever it is you might throw at the various specs that it's going to make it worth it to you. If you're throwing it out, yes, pull out the hard drive. Otherwise, my best suggestion, wipe the hard drive, and then, yes, pass that on to someone in the family, someone you know and trust that needs a new system. Yes, even those old systems sometimes can be of great value to, yes, some of the kids or someone who's a little bit more down on their luck. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.